TWO Radio at Radio Stormer on the Daily Stormer.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio on Radio Stormer at thedailystormer.com. Today's date is the 17th of July 2015. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and before I introduce my co-host, I'll just remind people, as always, that we do have a chat room, we do have a live stream, you can subscribe to our podcasts, and you can find all the links to that in the right-hand sidebar at the dailystormer.com site, just underneath Andre's Twitter feed. Now I've got that advertisement out of the way, I'll introduce my co-host, Mr. Dennis Wise. How are you doing today, Dennis?
Well, I'm fine. I'm just glad you got in touch with me yesterday to remind me it was Friday today.
Gets a bit like that sometimes, doesn't it? You forget.
Well, this week's long, yeah.
You forget what the days of the week are, because you're sort of working every day. That's what I find.
Yeah, it's just so similar every day, is no different.
Try and sort of have a little time to myself on Sunday, but apart from that, it's sort of constantly trying to be active and trying to get the message out and do things, sure, for our people. Now, I know you've been particularly busy because I see you've finally finished episode 9 of Communism by the Back Door.
Yeah, I had a problem with it, because it took quite a while. Because I think I mentioned last time, I like the videos to flow, and it just weren't flowing. But then eventually, with enough perseverance and one or two switches here, there and everywhere, it worked. I mean, at one point I had evictions in England going on, you know what I mean? But it just seemed not as important once I'd got some other stuff off the internet,
Well, it all seems to flow very, very well. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of information that you've packed into that one video.
I try. It's 15 minutes. I mean, it's a long time in one way, but it's not in another. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was just sort of looking through it all. I mean, it goes from the bankers to Israel to the formation of Israel to what they're doing to the Palestinians, why they get away with it, to the control of America, to their war on Christianity, and it's all linked in together. Sort of thing you want to watch again, and you've got a lot of interesting quotes in there as well from various Jews, I noticed, especially that Rabbi Stephen Wise. It starts off with Marxism is Judaism. That even that's going to come to a shock to a lot of the conspiracy crowd, I would have thought. I mean, they know Marxism is the enemy, but a lot of them don't realise just how Jewish it is.
Exactly. Jewish core.
Yeah, throughout. I mean, Marxism just is, it's Judaism for the Gentiles, isn't it? It's the Gentiles serving the Jews, basically.
Yeah, I came across a video as well, which is in the East German part of Berlin, and they have a statue of Marx up even today.
Well, I know after the war they destroyed all the German monuments and put monuments up to the Soviets. And the people that had, just raped their women and changed the name of the street. So there's Elia Ehrenberg Platz or Street.
Yeah.
And various names of these other butchers that butchered the German people, and they named the streets after them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one's an alley after Marx, Karl Marx Alley.
Statues of him everywhere. I mean, the guy was the ideology that he started has been responsible for more deaths than anything else. I mean, we're told that religion has caused all these wars and these deaths, but it hasn't. When you look into it, I mean, Marxism, atheism has caused more deaths than anything else. If you add abortions to it as well, I mean, the numbers are just absolutely staggering.
Yeah. Well, the Jews have been kicked out of a lot of countries, but it's never been for their religious views. It's always been for the politics or their skullduggery. You know, never for their religious view. You know, that's just a myth. They just are what they are, and countries will find out sooner or later.
Well, we're very tolerable people. I mean, we allowed the Jews into our countries. We allowed them to do whatever it is that they do. We kept them separate from us. We never persecuted them for their religion. We didn't even know what was in their religion until fairly recent times. And once they did know what was in this Talmud, I mean, they tried to ban it and tried to make people aware of what there was that was actually in it. But they kept it hidden for us for a long time. We didn't realise that the Talmud is just full of hatred for us, absolute hatred for the Gentiles. And they curse the Christians every day as part of their prayers. You know, they curse the Christian people.
Yeah, sure.
And this is later on in your video. It shows you just the way that Christians are being persecuted, all the way from the ones out in the Middle East that are being attacked in Syria and Iraq. There are no Christians anymore in Iraq. All the way to Argentina, where you've got these feminists. I mean, that's just some shocking footage there. You've got these half-naked feminist lesbians that are performing lesbian sex acts in front of these Argentinian Christians, and they all linked arms. I suppose they got their arms linked like that to prevent these old hags breaking from through, getting into the church.
Well, apparently it goes on every year, but nobody knows which church is going to be attacked. So, you know, they've got to be quick on the mark when they find out which one's been targeted. And in this particular instance, the men linked arms to block them from defacing the church. Not only did they get abused verbally and physically, but like you said, you know, they had Babylon in front of them.
And this is, you know, this is going on all over the place, isn't it? You've got Fee Men that have been doing this in the Ukraine. You've got Pussy Riot, what they've been doing it in Russia. And this Pussy Riot, and you've got the information there on the video that the National Endowment for Democracy gave a grant to Voina, who is the supposed arts project, and they're the ones that funded Pussy Riot.
And I think George Soros had something to do with it at some point as well.
Well, Soros is to do with the National Endowment for Democracy, isn't he?
Yeah, so it all ties in. This is why they get good press in the West. I mean, in the UK alone, like there was on the on Channel 4, and, you know, they never got asked any difficult questions, just got that's what torture they went through when they're in a Russian prison.
And also, you've got Tony Blair on there with his promotion of homosexuality and them saying, you know, Britain is no longer a Christian country. And the way that Christians are being persecuted in Britain, they're being taken to court if they won't allow queers to say that they got married in their church. You've got bakers that are being taken to court for saying we don't want to bake a cake depicting homosexual acts. I mean, one of these cakes, these queers that wanted the Christian bakers to bake this cake for them, I mean, there was overtones of pedophilia in it because they wanted children's television characters, Bert and Ernie from the Muppets, they wanted to put them on there insinuating that they were homosexual. And that's a children's TV program. So they're bringing homosexuality into children's TV characters and then demanding that Christian bakers put that on a cake for them. And that's what that case was about. Yeah. It wasn't just promoting homosexuality, was it?
Well, the thing is, it wasn't that long back. There was a couple, I think in Wales, actually, had a boarding house or some kind of a holiday hotel.
I think that was Cornwall.
Cornwall, yeah. And they had two gays turn up and they refused. And they got fined, didn't they, in court. It was the same couple.
Well, this is what they're doing. They're just looking for places where they can do this. They do it deliberately. Yeah. They find somewhere that they know is run by Christian people that maybe have a few plaques up in there saying, you know, God loves everyone or whatever. And they think, right, well, we'll attack this group. And then they go and demand something overtly homosexual.
Well, that's it. And they're attacked from different angles. Like you said, they're attacked with homosexuality, they're attacked with feminism, you know, they're attacked with ISIS. It goes on and on. It's just from different angles with the ultimate aim of destroying Christianity and the genocide of the white race.
Well, the white race and Christianity are inseparable. Before we were even called the white race, we were called Christians, and we were defined as Christians, as defined against these other races, which were Muslims or heathens, and the white people were the Christians. It's been that way for over a thousand years.
Yeah.
You know, all the European nations calling themselves Christian. I mean, that was a shared identity. That was the shared identity that we as white people had before we were known as Europeans. Before we had this, you know, exactly. We were all shared, we're part of Europe. We all shared it as part of this faith that we had. And it's with the destruction of that faith and putting the faith in man instead. And man is fallible. You know, all the while you've got faith in God and you've got this thing that's above man that you're looking up to. When people take oaths, they're swearing an oath to something that is above man. And when they believe in that, they have a fear that if they break that oath, that they're going to be punished by something that is above man. So when you take away this belief in God, you take away the fear of any punishment from these people in the governments. So their oaths mean nothing. They're not taking an oath to, you know, the omnipotent creator anymore because they don't believe in it. So then the corruption creeps in.
Yeah.
You know,
I was listening to Benjamin Friedman the other night, actually. He was giving a speech and it mentioned that the Jews, in the Talmud, it says there's a certain day of the year that they can go into a synagogue and denounce any oath or promise that they made within the last or the previous 12 months, which means not only do they bring what they bring, but they're also people you can't trust, because even on a blood oath, this particular prayer at the same this particular day of the year clears them from even the blood oath they may have made. So you know, there is no trust.
Yeah, I think this is Yom Kippur on their day of Atonement. I forget the exact
name of the prayer,
but it's a prayer to absolve them of any guilt for breaking their oaths in the future.
Yeah.
And the naive, gullible Zio-Christians think that this Day of Atonement is them praying for forgiveness for things that they've done wrong. And it's not. It's saying absolve them from guilt for when they lie in the future. It's not asking for forgiveness for anything that they've done wrong. You know, it's forming a way of getting away with breaking their oaths. I mean, originally in Canada, they weren't allowed to be used as witnesses in trials or put on a jury because of this oath. I mean, this was known about. I'm really annoyed that I can't actually remember the exact name of it now. But it is on Yom Kippur that they do it.
Yeah, Day of Atonement. Yeah, that's right. Well, this is what you're dealing with. I mean, when all the Bolsheviks are reading the Talmud, it's not good, is it?
Well, it's just pure evil what they do. I mean, another one of those quotes in that episode you've got there. You've got them admitting that their god is Lucifer.
Yeah, that's right. I think, at the end of the day, it all stems from the Khazars and their, you know, not actually being Jewish. And they were a mongrelized race or whatever they was before they decided to be Jewish. And it's just complete evil warmongers, and it's just been handed down through generations. Hence, you know, the problems we have in Israel today. Because I think they outnumber the proper Jew, or the Jew who was supposed to come from Israel, by 80%, you know.
Well, I don't think there was any of them left. I think the original ones from the tribe of Judah became Christian. They stopped being, identifying as being part of Judah, and they became Christian, and they just, you know, they were there with the rest of the Roman Christians and the Greek Christians, because they'd been living in that place. The majority of Jerusalem was not from Judah anyway. Reading Flavius Josephus, he says that only the Essenes, that was the only religious group that was still Judah by blood, because the Pharisees had been taken over as Sadducees. They were all these Edomite groups, these Arab groups basically that were living in that area, that had been in that area since the tribe of Judah got removed to Babylon. So the actual Israelite peoples, they disappeared off else into the rest of the world. And you had this tiny portion of the tribe of Judah went back to Jerusalem, and they ended up interbreeding with the tribes that were there and the Arab tribes that were there. And Flavius Josephus talks all about this. So even before the Khazars became 80% of them, they were mongrelized anyway, and the ones that weren't mongrelized just became Christian.
Well, I heard also what Benjamin Freeman said, like, that the word Jew was not actually mentioned in the Bible until the English translation, because there's no such, there's no letter J in Latin, which was and a couple of other languages that it was written in. They couldn't possibly pronounce the name Jew. It was something completely different until the English translation. So leaves a lot to the desired what really went on at that time.
Well, yeah, it was an H and an I. I mean, I've got a very old Bible. I've got the Douay Rheims before the official Catholic Douay Rheims came out, and in that it's got instead of Jerusalem, it says Hierusalem, H I. Instead of a J, and it talks of Judah, you know, the word Jew, as you say, you know, the 19th century when they came up with it. And I think this group then thought, you know, well, we can capitalize on this, and we can claim to be Israelites and part of
which
Israel,
they have,
which is what they've done
through Goyim traitors helping them as well.
When really, you know, they are the enemy. They're the ones that put Christ to death. And they've been our enemy right the way through history. We've been fighting against them, where they've been infiltrating our institutions and corrupting our people and using usury to destroy our nations. And we didn't have them in Britain until the 10th or the 11th century. And up until that point, you know, we thought that the Jews had tails, because it says in the Bible, you know, that Jesus said that they were the sons of the devil.
That's it.
So, you know, that meant they had tails. You hadn't seen a Jew before. You know, the devil has a tail and horns, so the Jews would have as well. And you look at depictions of the Jews from that time, and you know, they are literally depicted as devils.
Well, they look extremely different to any other type of European. They've just got a look of their own. In fact, I mean, Europe were used to them, you know. I mean, after so long, they knew what to expect. But when they went to America in after 1880, something like that, I don't think America was ready for what was coming, to be honest, because I'm sure when they landed, they looked at America and it was like a couple of locusts looking at a harvester, you know, ready to be plowed into, because I just don't believe America knew what was coming. They hadn't been hardened to it.
Well, if you look at the stuff that was written around that time, I mean, they did notice that there was a big difference between these, what they termed East Europeans, and the Northern Europeans that had come before. I mean, there was a big difference, and they were quite shocked at the way that they behaved. You know, with their liquor running and the alcohol running and the women.
Well, they were carpet bagging, weren't they, after the Civil War as well? Yeah. You know, so I mean, I think they got banned from some southern states, if not all of them. So it doesn't take them long to get their machinery in motion, if you like.
Well, this is it, and this is another theme in this video of yours, is the way that the Jews now have control of America, and through their control of America, they control everything else, don't they?
They're in complete control of everything. I mean, the Bolshevik Khazars run Wall Street, run Hollywood, run the banking system. You name it, you know, the media, you name it, they run it. It's that simple. It's a fact of life that can't be ignored. And the Bolshevik Khazars.
Well, this is how they cover up their crimes. This is how Israel, you know, commits all these crimes there in Palestine and never gets investigated by the United Nations. Nobody ever speaks up against it. These horrific attacks that they do, where they massacre all the children, the babies. There's some horrific pictures there of Palestinian infants being picked up, and nothing's said about it.
Well, there's worse, you know. I mean, I could have put worse up, but I mean, you know, I don't want to make it distasteful. Obviously, you've got to show some of what's happening there, but, you know, I could have put a lot more worse ones up, which is, you know, shocking to people. But I felt that what I put up was enough to, for people to understand that, you know, when they go on about the Holocaust or the Holocaust, as we say, I mean, the people in Palestine have suffered for a long time now with, you know, the families being wiped out and children being burnt to a cinder with, you know, with phosphorus and all this. An evil regime which is getting away with it and has done for quite a while.
Well, of course, one of the ways to get away with it is because through the control of the financial system. And that's another theme that's running through this. And you can see the way that they control everything and pull the strings, because they complain so much about Iran having nuclear capabilities and nuclear medicine that they use it for.
And yet
Israel has never once been inspected for what nuclear weapons they have. They talk about chemical weapons.
Yeah, well, they're saying that now that they've signed this agreement that Iran might secretly build a bomb, when all the time they secretly built a bomb.
Yeah, they built it in secret with stolen nuclear secrets from America.
Yeah, if it wasn't the guy who put his hand up at the window and told the world, you know what I mean? Like in the car. Remember, he's been put back in prison, and he was released for a while, and then they put him back in prison. The guy who told the world that Israel did have this this nuclear bomb. It worked at one of the nuclear plants. I can't remember his name.
Benunu? Is it something strange like that?
Yeah, he's in solitary confinement anyway, and he's probably losing his mind by now. But yeah, I mean, and people forget, Israel were, you know, are the only ones down there what have the bomb. Or maybe 300 or 400 of them.
Well, that's the thing. Pakistan have got nuclear weapons.
Yeah,
Pakistan, you don't really hear them saying much about Israel. I would imagine they're in the same pocket as Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Bahrain, and Jordan, all these other countries that appear to be allied with Israel, even though they claim to be Muslim countries. They still do all their business with Israel.
Well, I think they get threatened by America. Because I know when America has to go into Afghanistan, there were some of the Taliban were escaping over the border, and I think it was America who I can't remember the leader then of Pakistan, but I think they got to him and he had to follow, you know, whatever they said, and this is how they do it. Because America is run by these Khazars anyway. You know, you look at Obama's Congress, you know, well, advisors and the Khazars in the Congress, and Clinton's advisors before then, and Bush's, no doubt, the majority of Jews, you know. So America isn't run by its own government, as the video shows again with the guy who died recently. I can't remember his name now. An American patriot anyway, and he explained to Hannity, and Hannity wasn't having it on Fox. But what he was saying was absolutely true, and he got jailed for 7 years as well for speaking out. He got set up and jailed.
Yeah, that's a good clip. I can't remember.
Trafficking, yeah.
That was it. There was somebody else you had on there, which I hadn't actually seen before, and this was Michael Schur. I think he was the head of the Bin Laden unit. That's a really good clip, that one is. You know, sort of saying, well, no, why should we care, you know, when people vote in the Middle East? It's the American people that we should be concerned about. I mean, what happened to him, do you know?
Well, he's obviously retired from that particular job, but I think he's an author now. He has wrote a book, I think it's something called The Road to Hell or something, which is about the dealings with Israel. So he's fervently against Israel and an American patriot.
I mean, you have to be against them when you find out, just find out how much control they have and just what it is that they're doing to the rest of the world.
Well, again, you know, I mean, the false flag on September 11th, I mean, it can only be covered up by people who have the power to cover it up. Same with the Kennedy assassination. And again, you know, everything points to Mossad and Israel.
And this is just it. I mean, that was the really shocking event that really shook the world, was this 911. Yep. And I think, you know, it's quite clear that the only people that could have carried this off would have been Israel and would have been the Mossad.
Yeah, with the help of certain individuals in the government as well.
Even if they just knew about it, they obviously knew about it, but did nothing.
No, because they're on the same side as Israel, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, Israel and the Jews will look after themselves, and I do think these people, all these homosexuals who think everything going from now, and all these other feminists and all these American Christians who back Israel, they'll all get some kind of a vicious shock at some time, because Kazars are what they are, you know. There's no loyalty.
They'll just be used as pawns by them. Even Netanyahu, he explains that, he uses America. Yeah. He owns America in that video. He's asked, I forget what it is, how do you win your war so quickly? We use America.
We can't master it or something, And what he said is true, because we have America. No one dare move against them. I mean, when you are fighting a country such as Palestine, who have no army, no navy, no air force, it's not that difficult to get a quick victory, especially with the firepower what Israel have, and nobody else will come to defend them because they haven't the capability of winning that war anyway.
Well, it's not a war. I mean, it's wrong to describe it as a war. It's just a massacre helpless, innocent people, really. Civilians.
Yeah.
They've made Palestine into basically the world's largest prison compound.
Exactly, yeah. And everything that they're claimed went on in Europe, you know, with Germany and World War II and everything, you know, goes out the window when you see what they're doing to the Palestinians and have been doing for 50 years now.
Well, it's projection, isn't it? This is what I find with the Jews. They project onto other people what it is that they actually are responsible for.
Yeah, they're very good at that, aren't they?
Yeah, well, it's an extension of that Polish proverb: the Jew screams out in pain while he attacks you.
Yeah,
and the Jew makes out that he's the one being persecuted while he does the persecuting.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think the persecution is like we said earlier on, is the eventual genocide of the white race, because again, just like Christianity, they're using all these other different tactics, you know, immigration and such like, you know, to attack the white homeland of Europe and once of South Africa and of America, you know, by the old Braveheart quote of, if you can't beat them one way, we'll breed them out.
Now, well, part of this is that they don't stand out so much when there are other races there. You were pointing out earlier.
Yeah, well, if they had a certain, if all Jews were green, then you'd recognise them straight away. But because they can blend and, you know, they can sit in the Congress, you wouldn't know from, you know, at a glance who's a Jew and who isn't. So it's quite easy. They're not like blacks or, you know, or Asian and Japanese who stand there straight away. Jews don't particularly, well, Jews can be of that race anyway. So they have that ability to be like stealth-like and move in a stealth way without people even knowing.
If you're not used to seeing them, then and you're not used to identifying them and knowing that they're different, then you just don't realise it. I think we used to be able to see it a lot more.
Well,
until,
I think
until they brought these other races in, because that confuses things. That's why they do it.
Well, if you look at Hollywood, like say Streisand, you immediately think Jew because she has all the features of a Jew. But then I was quite surprised at Charles Bronson being a Jew, you know, from The Magnificent Seven, you know, and a couple of others I could name, who don't have that instantaneous Jewish look, and that they play to their strength, I believe.
Well, one of the reasons, I mean, this is why they used to get them to wear identifying markers, whether it was the Star of David, like they did in Germany, or whether it yeah. was pointy hats, like they have done in the past. I mean, they used to have to do that so that people would know that it was a Jew that they were dealing with.
I mean, think back, Michael Douglas, Kirk Douglas, you know, they don't obviously look like Jews, you know, Tony Curtis.
Well, they get that from interbreeding with us. You know, a certain amount exactly. of them will interbreed with the host, and then they can put those people up, or they can infiltrate the aristocracy that way, and then they can get into power, which is that's exactly yeah. what they've done, isn't it?
That's exactly what they've done, yeah. They have this way of being able to move into a country, set the wheels in motion, you know, to take control of certain areas where they can make great wealth, and then they have the ability then to bribe these traitorous goyim or move in circles, you know, to eventually get into the royal bloodline.
Well, you can see this is what they've done with Cameron. He's part Jewish. And look, there he is.
As was Churchill. Minister. Nothing changes, so was Churchill, you know.
Which side of was it with Churchill? Because I know that he had... I heard she had supposedly Red Indian blood, or part Red Indian. So she was part Jewish and part Red Indian, was she?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, the old thing is that it's handed down from the mother's side. She was the one who had the Jewish blood.
See, one of the things is, you know, this is what they do. They interbreed with the aristocracy of the host nation so they can take it over, while at the same time claiming to be a pure race that isn't allowed to marry the other races. Yeah, this is a complete nonsense because you've got these black Jews, you've got these Ethiopian Jews, you've got the so-called German Jews, American Jews, Chinese yeah. Jews, Japanese Jews, and yet they'll make this claim that they only married within their own. Yeah, it's obvious that they haven't. And you've got people like Professor Kevin McDonald that does his thesis on them, thinking that they've only married within their own, and they haven't changed since biblical times. But they obviously have, because otherwise you wouldn't have all these different types of them. You wouldn't have Ethiopian Jews, you know?
Yeah, well, I can always remember Norman Tebbit coming out once and saying that he wasn't happy because he felt that the British Pakistani supporters of the cricket team, put Pakistan before England, which probably did. But all the while, he was a Jew, and the Jews put, you know, the Jew before anybody.
And this is it. They've been so clever that, you know, people don't seem to think that there's anything wrong with that. They don't understand it. You know, these Jews, they put Israel first. Oh, well, that's okay. But if you hear of Pakistani or whatever in Britain, and you say, well, they put in Muslims first, or they put in Pakistan first, but you know, people don't like it. They're against that, and yet it's quite acceptable for these Jews to talk about putting Israel first. You even got a group called Israel First. You know, you've got these special friends passport. Of Israel. Dual passport. How can you have somebody with dual citizenship in your country?
Fight for the Israeli army. They'll go off and fight for, do the service in the Israeli army, come back to America again.
And that's an obvious spy, isn't it? A dual citizen is an obvious spy.
They're always spying, but unfortunately, people like Bush catch them and let them go. In fact, the rejoicing Israelis after 9/11 were all released and sent back to Israel when it was clear they were there to film the event. Or document the event, so they must have prior knowledge. But obviously, as I said, the Bush and the Cheneys, they're not interested. Only to side with Israel.
In Syria, it's against the law to be a dual citizen. You cannot be a dual citizen, and to be a Syrian, you have to be able to show that your grandparents are Syrian. Mm-hmm. There's no way anybody with dual citizenship could ever get to any positions in politics or own any real estate or any businesses or anything like that.
That's all.
well, it's got to be the way that it's supposed to be, and yet we've got these, you know, these people that are saying that they're half Jewish, or they are Jewish, and yet they're claiming to have the best interests of the British people at heart. Yet you've got people like Ed Miliband, putting himself up for Prime Minister when he's Jewish.
Exactly, his dad were a communist.
And he's obviously not religious, because they can't use that excuse. Oh, well, it's just a different religion. Because he's not a religious Jew. So what kind of a Jew is he? He's a racial Jew. And his loyalties are to his other racial Jews. And yet he has the front to think that he should be our Prime Minister. Gall of these creatures.
There was a comment from a Jew on the Part 9. And his point was that... when I mentioned that there's a menorah, a giant menorah across from the White House, and they banned the nativity scene, and he said to me, "Yeah, but you obviously didn't notice the Christmas tree was still there." And I said to him, "Since when is the Christmas tree religious?"
Well, what does that matter? It's a giant menorah that is overshadowing everything.
The cross has been taken down and a menorah put up. You can't be more plain who's in charge. You've got Obama painting with lights of the rainbow on the White House. It just doesn't get any clearer who's in charge.
Definitely not the American people. I know that for a fact.
Well, I believe Tel Aviv is one of the main homosexual cities in the world. So, it's managing to say a colour of the White House.
Well, I was just going to say, you're quite correct there. Tel Aviv is one of the gay capitals, and they advertise it as being, gay friendly for queers to go to, and they'll be welcome there. You've got Boy George, a well-known queer who's even done prison time for abusing rent boys. And he's got the Star of David tattooed on his head because the Jews are so welcoming to queers. And yet you've got people that think that these Jews somehow follow the Old Testament. A major Old Testament law is that sodomites should be put to death. The Jews don't follow the Old Testament. They do all they can to do the opposite of what the Old Testament says. They'll do all they can to get rid of the Ten Commandments if they see it anywhere. They don't want the Ten Commandments taught in schools. They want sodomy taught in schools.
The moral's too high there. But do you wonder why there's an elite of Jews in Hollywood who are homosexual? Do you wonder why Jimmy Savile goes down there and talks to the Jewish Parliament when he's a known paedophile sex offender, supplier of paedophile of kids rather to other paedophiles? It's a club and we ain't in it, and I don't think we need to be in it. I don't think we want to be in it.
Well, he was a special friend of Israel, wasn't he, Jimmy Savile?
Of course he was. Yeah,
known as being a special friend to Israel, honorary. Friend of Israel goes speaking to their parliament, wears the Star of David. Very proud of that he was we can't actually prove that he was a Jew, but he used to say that
he was an honorary Jew, I think.
The Jewiest Gentile you could find.
I think that's what he said. I'm probably the most Jewish of the Gentiles.
You, from your video there, you think that where this is heading is them setting up this Solomon's Temple again, rebuilding this temple of theirs. Well, that would be more of a sort of religious side of it. Do you want to go into that a little bit more?
Well, it's the belief of these people in the city of London, the Rothschilds and others. This belief in the coming of the Antichrist, and they are Luciferian. I showed in the Olympic Games of Britain, when they had the burning rising phoenix on the final day of the Olympics, and I've made a video of that up on things about Part 5, Part 6. All ties in with the fact that they want to make Jerusalem the capital, and the coming of Lucifer to be the New World Order, to get everybody one religion. Under one religion and everybody under one communist rule. And obviously, if you're going to take down one of the most sacred of Muslim buildings, there's going to be some problems. I'm quite sure, which is why they'd have to take out the Palestinians first, and they've got surrounding Muslim countries which are already, you know, in the back pocket, such as Saudi Arabia and Bahrain and Jordan. And the last military threat down there would need to be taken out, which is Iran, which they're always after having a, you know, some kind of a, not actually themselves, but trying to get America to get involved with Iran. So, yeah, we may not believe this, or people listening may not believe in this Antichrist. The problem is that they do, you know.
Well, I think this makes sense, Dennis, because if they're going to come up with a New World Order religion, which they obviously want to do, they want, they're trying to make out that all the religions are the same, they're all equal. They've already come up with this Abrahamic faith, you know, that there are three main religions, not, you know, whereas before there was just one, Christianity, that was the faith of white people, that was the only religion that was a true religion. But now they've changed all that, you've got these Abrahamic faiths, and there isn't really any legitimacy to that. So in order to actually give some credibility to a new religion of theirs, you know, one way to do that would be to rebuild Solomon's temple, supposedly in the spot where it was, and then and have that as the focal point. And that would lend credibility to the new one world religion, wouldn't it? They, you know, they would be saying, well, you know, there's a direct line going through these temples to this one that we're building today. And they preach the one world religion from in there.
And it would explain the annihilation of the Palestinians and everything else, what's gone down there in the Middle East. Because you've got to remember, this goes back, you know, back to the days of the Boer War and Rhodes and the Rothschilds, and possibly even before then, you know, where they were looking at this one world government, and World War II was just kind of a 6-year hiccup, if you like, where the Germans fought as valiantly as they could, but obviously in the end outnumbered and defeated. And so then after that, everything just carried on again. The United Nations have done a piece on that, where that is blatantly Luciferian and communist. And other parts as well. I went into the Vatican II with the Roman Catholic Church after World War II, which again, you know, a lot of Catholics left the church after that because they realised this weren't the way to go to accept homosexuality and atheism. It's just the jigsaw all coming together as the documentary goes along. And like I said, I honestly believe that the final piece is the genocide of the white race.
Well, that's what they've been aiming at for a long time. But so since you brought up World War II there, Dennis, there was a question from someone in the chat room to do with that subject. And they said that Berlin was known as the reddest city this side of Moscow. And it was a real Babylon before National Socialism took over. And Hitler sent Goebbels there to bring them round to National Socialism, and he succeeded. And this commenter, they wanted to know more about this, and also whether you knew some of the, you know, how he managed to do that, to turn them from communists into National Socialists.
Well, it was about 1926, I think, November the 7th, when he actually arrived in Berlin. He was 29 years old, this 29-year-old man walking with a limp. Was given the job. I mean, he was like a party organizer at the time. He was given the job of going to, as you said, probably the most reddest city in the world, apart from Moscow, and turning it round. And at that time, Germany only had something like 50,000 members. Sorry, the National Socialists, 50,000 members in the whole of Germany. And in Berlin, there was just a few hundred, where, you know, the communists were overflowing in Berlin at that time. So, yeah, it speaks volume, I think, for his leadership qualities. Obviously, in his own right, he was a great speaker, but I think you've got to look a little bit deeper than that. To go to a place like Berlin and face up to what the few hundred National Socialists had to face up to, and eventually be victorious, you've got to look at his leadership qualities again, I feel.
Well, he's probably one of my favourite leaders of the National Socialists is Goebbels. I think he had a bit of, because of what you say, he had a limp, he wasn't a particularly impressive sort of physical figure, and yet he had a way of speaking and an energy to him that was similar to Hitler. I mean, he was quite captivating. And mm-hmm. the propaganda that he brought out, I mean, he tried to make things as truthful as possible and as simple as possible, so that people could understand it, following, you know, Hitler's instructions that propaganda has got to be accessible to all the different strata of society. It's no good making it too intelligent, too clever, because only the most intelligent people are going to understand it. You know, and it's not good making it too simple, because then the more intelligent people are not going to be interested in reading it. So, you know, it's a fine line, isn't it? And he must have got that. He must have been so good at getting that fine line right, you know?
Yeah, I think he also had a bit of a contact with his members as well. Like, you know, if ever they were injured, it was there. And even some of the funerals, it was there, you know what I mean? Because it was a particularly nasty place to be, to try and turn these communists the control out of the city, to take it away from them. I mean, in the first week you were there, they went on a march and that caused a street riot. So they weren't frightened of taking these people head on. I think that's his tactic, was to take them on head on, and eventually to get through to the people of the city. Were these, because he called them Soviet Foreign Legion, because they were, you know, funded by the Soviets. They were taking Bolshevik money, and he managed to convince the people over a period of time that what they were supporting wasn't in their own interests, so to speak. And, you know, I think he had... Hitler came as well and gave a speech as well, which got everybody going at one point. I think it was about May 1927. Been there about a year, and that got everybody going. And then they got banned 5 days after Hitler. 5 days after his speech, they were banned then in the National Socialist Party, were banned in Berlin. But that didn't even stop in them, because what they did was they formed like little clubs, like swimming clubs or book clubs and things like that, just to say that they were still around, you know.
Well, that's a good tactic to have. I mean, I know the nationalist groups are involved with some of the reenactment societies and other historical societies. You tend to get nationalists joining them. And obviously that's where you would go if you wanted to meet people that internationalism and patriotism and forming these groups. I mean, two things that it just made me think of then when you were saying that. One of them is you said that he made them aware that they were agents of the Soviets. Now, in mm-hmm. Russia today, they've brought in a law that any NGOs have to identify themselves as agents of a foreign power. And these non-governmental organisations are obviously like the one that we talked about earlier
that,
were funding Pussy Riot, that are funded by the National Endowment for Democracy. Now, these NGOs, they've got them in Russia, but they also got them in Syria, the Syrian Human Rights Observatory.
Yes, and CIA.
Mainly these human rights organisations. But Russia has actually made this law. They have to be identified as agents of a foreign power. So that instantly makes people aware that they need to be careful of what this group is telling them, because mm-hmm. it's not to their benefit, it's to the benefit of a foreign power. And the second thing you said there about him visiting the people when they were ill, and he was there in amongst the people. I mean, this is something that went right the way through National Socialism. This was a big thing with the SS, was that the officers were there on the front lines with their men, and they did everything together with their men. They weren't sort of held separate from them in a separate officers' club, or sending the men out to fight at the front while they just remained at the back. They were right there in the front, in the thick of it, fighting with them. So the leaders were accessible to the people. at all times and accountable. And this was a big thing with National Socialism. People were responsible and they could be held accountable for what they did. And Hitler, you know, he committed suicide at the end of the war. He held himself accountable for everything. You know, he didn't run away, try and disappear. You know, he knew that there would be a kangaroo court. He knew what would happen to him. So he did, you know, the really honourable thing, which is the same thing that great leaders have done throughout history. You know, when all else fails, they fall on their sword.
The Japanese samurai.
Yeah, that's an example that they led. So so Goebbels was leading by example, I would say. You know, he was setting an example to follow.
Turning point. Well, one of the major turning points, I feel, was he was there. He first arrived in 1926. In 1929, the stock market crash affected everybody as well, whereas suddenly the unemployment rose. I think it was 600,000, was 6 million in Germany, 600,000 in Berlin. So, again, he could target these unemployed and present them with an alternative to this Russian communism. And, of course, Horst Wessel was with him, and another great speaker who was assassinated. And again, you know, at his funeral, the communists tried to attack his coffin. Such was the hatred of Horst Wessel. So, it was a task and a half. But by the time Hitler came again for speech, I think it was September the 10th of 1930, 100,000 turned up outside the Sports Plaza trying to get in for the rally of Hitler. And that's the famous speech of of Goebbels when he attacks the Jews and says that their days are numbered and, you know, they're not going to take any more of it.
No, he was very effective in the videos that I've seen. The way that he speaks. I mean, obviously, I can only read the subtitles because I don't speak German. But you can see that the power was there. So when these communists were even attacking the funeral march, I would say that again by letting the communists, you know, just show just how despicable they actually were in their behaviour by doing things like that, by assassinating Horst Wessel. Yeah. I should imagine that helped the National Socialist cause as well.
Well, I'm sure Goebbels was clever enough, you know, to use both the physical side, because the SA was there to help, and obviously he was excellent at exposing these things like you said when attacking the coffin. I'm quite sure he made the most of it, which is disgusting to anybody. At the end of the day, the actual leader of the communists, by the way, at that time was the same guy who would lead East Germany after the war. So he must have survived the war somehow. Walter Ulbricht, I believe.
I think there's you can get a good idea of what things were like by watching the German film. It's not called Horst Wessel, I don't think. I forget what it's actually called. But that sort of talks about the time. And it shows you the communists and what they were up to. I mean, I think they were trying to sabotage things as well, and I imagine that the National Socialists were able to say, "Well, look, you know, you've done this strike and you've smashed up the factory, and now you're unable to earn any work. You're unable to earn any wages. Mm-hmm. You know, if you do this, if you get rid of the people at the top, you're not going to be able to function. You know, you need the head, the arms, and the legs. You know, you can't get rid of the head and then expect, you know, the whole body to continue to function. Now, this is a bit like, you know, what communism was like. It was saying we'll attack the people that are running the factories, and because they've got more money than you. But if you do that, then the factories aren't going to run, and you're not going to be able to earn any money. And you're going to have nobody to run it at the top. In the National Socialism, we're saying, you know, we need a dialogue between everybody so that the people at the bottom can talk to the people at the top, so that the top can understand what's going on. This goes back to, you know, communication between the different classes rather than war between the different classes.
Well, it's funny you should say that, yeah, because that, another couple of tactics that Goebbels used, he got the Hitler Youth eventually, you know, to hold like public discussions evenings. And the title was something like, you know, the Swastika or the Soviet Star. What we were doing, we were educating people. This is what he was trying to do. And another one, what he did, he used to get people who had actually lived in the Soviet Union, worked in the Soviet Union, because some Germans previous to that had worked in the Soviet Union. And he got them to give talks to say how miserable an existence it was over in the Soviet Union. You know, all these things, you know, at a time when this unemployment was kicking in, was most appealing, obviously, to a lot of people who were already socialists, but as Goebbels wanted to do, he wanted a socialism without the Marxism, and it obviously appealed to them, and eventually, you know, they did come out on top, which was an incredible feat, you know, which today, if Germany had won World War II, would have been more recognised, and a lot more people would have understood his problem.
Well, I think one of the problems there is you say that the people were already socialists. It's a question of getting them to then be nationalists, because people, they look at you know, what the nation's done. They look at patriotism. I mean, it's the same now, and you look at it and you think, well, how can I be proud of these people? Look what they've done. That, you know, they haven't really been that good, and they don't care about us. You know, you've got like these people at the top that talk about patriotism, Cameron, you know, all these horrible people in Parliament. So it's hard to get people to feel patriotic about their country, because they're not taught about the positive things about their country. You know, they're taught the negative things about them, aren't they?
Doesn't help when apparently the other day, I think it was the Sun that reported that the English or the British in London are finally outnumbered now by the immigrants. And that's in their own capital. So it's very hard to feel nationalistic in a capital that you're outnumbered in.
And when you've got people that are bragging about that and thinking that's a positive thing. Look, you know, we've replaced, you know, over half of you. Celebrate that fact. Well, you know, no, you don't want to be celebrating that fact. And I find, you know, it's a hard fine line to tread, really, because, you know, you want to say, well, look, you know, we did a terrible thing going into Germany and attacking Germany. Winston Churchill was a devil in human flesh, you know, the British Empire has done some really wicked things. But at the same time, you still want to inspire patriotism and nationalism in the people. And you still want to speak about, you know, the heroes of our past and the good things that we've done, you know, and saying, you know, well, we brought reading, writing, electricity to these people, medicine, we taught them. You know, they wouldn't even be able to be complaining about the British Empire if we hadn't taught them to read and write. You know, this sort of thing. So it's a fine line that you're treading, because you're trying to inspire patriotism and nationalism, you know, in your people. But at the same time, you're trying to point out the mistakes that have been made in the past. You know, I should imagine it was pretty much the same back then in 1920s Germany, to be honest.
Yeah.
You're looking at, you know, they just lost the war, and you know, it must have been very hard to inspire nationalism at that time. Amazing that they did. Well, think about it.
Unbelievable that they actually did rise from the ashes to do what they did, and they must have been, you know, the powerful will of people like Goebbels and Hitler were just unstoppable.
It really is the greatest story never told.
For sure.
Which brings us to the end.
Times, you know, hey? I got criticised for years in that title to begin with.
Did you?
Yeah, one or two people came on and said, like, you know, that title's going to put people off. But I always believed that if it ever got to that point where it broke through, not so much mainstream, but broke through, the documentaries would have ever been made of Hitler. Like, it kind of took everyone on board and just sailed on. And I felt that the title then would come into its own, and now everybody just accepts it, that it is what it is, the greatest story that's never told.
Well, yeah, it's a truthful title. The acronym's a bit awkward, trying to, you know, all the letters. Yeah. But you know, saying it out loud and looking at it, it's exactly as Hitler was saying with the propaganda. You know, it needs to be truthful and it needs to be simple and appeal to everyone. And that instantly gets you thinking, well what's this the story of then? Never told. What was never told about it? You know, exactly. It gets people interested.
Well, it came from the fact that when I was a kid, I could remember the movie The Greatest Story Ever Told, which was obviously about Christ. So I just kind of just switched it. And since then, I've seen other versions on YouTube of, I think ones of Saigon or some of The Greatest Story Ever Told. I don't know whether that came out before mine or not. But honestly, you know, that came from the fact of the movie that I saw when I was a kid, The Greatest Story Ever Told.
Well, the greatest story never told really is the greatest story never told of Adolf Hitler, and people can find that still at the website greatestorynevertold.tv.
Yeah, the views have increased actually. They've more people's coming to the website now than ever before, because obviously it's the only way that obviously it's been banned on YouTube. It's probably one of the only ways you can see it on the internet now.
And the other one is Communism by the Back Door.
I mean, we're going to get a website. I mean, I think the website might be up, but it's Communism by the Backdoor.tv, just as The Greatest Story Never Told is .tv as well. So, yeah, and really what that is, I mean, we're hoping to get a Facebook page with the Communism one, because for some reason it doesn't get attacked the same. It may well do now. I've done this one on Israel, I don't know. But for some reason it hasn't got attacked the same as the Hitler one did. So, and that was banned immediately on Facebook and obviously YouTube. So at the moment, like, we're hopeful, because then I can put things in the documentary to mention, you know, that this is only just to show what has happened since World War II. If you want to know what happened during World War II or before, go to the greatest story ever told. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, well, both of them are excellent pieces of... propaganda for us, positive propaganda, white propaganda. Yeah, getting the truth out there to people. So, hopefully people will go and have a look at part 9 that you've just finished of that. And we'll be back again next week for another edition of Truth All Out Radio. So I'll say thank you very much for listening, and we do hope to see you again next time.
Thank you. We'll see you next week.